Welcome to Lack of Focus, an X-Wing miniatures game podcast brought to you by Dice 8 Productions. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to another episode of Lack of Focus, episode 41, the 2019 Christmas special. I am your host, Ed Horn, and alongside me tonight, one Mr. Sean Dorsey. Sean, how's it going, my friend?
Good. How you doing, Ed?
Good. And our producer extraordinaire, one Mr. Chris Sheriff. Chris, how's it going, my friend?
Good, good. So I actually picked, I looked back and saw, what did we call our last Christmas show? And it's like, oh, 2018 Christmas special. I was like, well, Star Wars and Christmas specials do have a history, so let's just keep it rolling. Unimaginative titles for the win.
All right, so in today's episode, we are going to try to keep this one brief because, unfortunately, we had some recording scheduling issues because, oddly enough, somebody went to go see some movie that came out on Thursday. Maybe a couple of people here may have seen it a couple of times at this point. So we are going to try to keep this one brief. We do have a very brief flight deck, but mostly non-X-Wing related. It's kind of like what we're getting ready to do for the holidays. We do have X-Wing related material. That is the main topic for tonight, which is breaking points, as we are now aware of some interesting point changes that are coming down the line in January. So we want to kind of talk about that. And for those of you who are interested, we will be doing our spoiler-free review of Rise of Skywalker. If you want to see the spoilerific one and have me go through all my bullet points, that will be in focus at a later date. So let's get right into it. Getting ready for Christmas stuff. Chris, I'm going to let you go on this one first.
Yeah, well, I actually tried to get some X-Wing stuff in, but just been super busy. I've played a couple of games, nothing special. I'm still messing around with Jedis because it's easy and it's like go-to. And I actually played some games with the Defenders and Seventh Sister. I say I played some games. It's probably a disservice to Will because like we played six turns and then he like shook hands because I think I outputted, I made a note, I can't remember the exact, but I did write it down and then lost it because I'm like super disorganized. But I think I did like 28 damage in three rounds of combat. remember, it's Seventh Sister who only has a two dice primary and two defenders. And I was like, yep, okay, well, that happened.
Are they generic of it for the deltas?
The Obsidian, so it's all Initiative 4. Onyx.
Oh, you want Onyx, so you want a little bit higher. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. I still really enjoy that list. Seventh Sister, Sense, Fire Control, and two Onyx Defenders. But, yeah, it was either 24 or 28 damage in three rounds of shooting. And I took three shields off one defender from a Proton Torpedo. And that was it. That was the only damage. Yeah.
The ability to focus and target lock every turn is kind of nice.
I didn't even target lock. It was literally like focus evade because I expected to take damage back. So I'm like, I'm going to focus evade and then evade on Seventh Sister. But it was the perfect storm of just dice. And I enjoyed it because, you know, six turn games are always fun. But I did
for you.
But I did my weird opening. I think I remember talking about this ages ago when we used to do Nova, when I was flying two defenders, where you just have them facing each other. So one of them does the 4K and barrel rolls, and then the other one does the 5 straight, and then they line up perfectly in formation. But I added Seventh Sister into it as well. So I had the Seventh Sister was in the center of the board, and then the two defenders were facing towards her, and then she did a hard turn, one defender K turn and barrel roll, the other defender slotted into a gap, and then I had a little three ship formation, which just formed up turn one, and I was like, yes, I can do it.
Very nice.
Yeah. So like, three rounds of like positioning and then three rounds of shooting and then we stopped playing. There was one
really a three turn game is really what you're saying. It's been actual turns of dice.
There was one B wing that was already at half points and he'd done three shields to one defender. So, yeah. Sorry, Will. It was a fun game, though. We enjoyed it.
Good. Well, I assume you're done shopping for Christmas at this juncture. At the time of recording, it's 3 days away.
I still have to get something for Jill. So, we were chatting about it. So, literally, to try and get a schedule for the listeners for this, it was like Ed's wife was going out tonight, but I had to do Christmas food shopping at some point. So me and Jill just went and did the food shop while Evie was napping and her parents were here to look after her. And we're chatting about it in the car. I was like, yeah, I don't really want anything this year. And like, I went to a Scottish butcher's and got like really nice British style food. I've got a haggis. So I'm going to be doing some mozzarella wrapped in haggis and then breadcrumbs. Some haggis wrapped in sausage meat and breadcrumbs and different starters like that. And then I got like black pudding, traditional English style bacon, which is, I think you guys call it back bacon or like the country ham style stuff, but it's cured the same way as your normal bacon. So you get like bacon, but a lot more meaty. And like, so loads of like breakfast food.
Dinner. You're already making me hungry again.
But like, basically I spent an absolute shit ton of money on food and like just little things like that. And like, I would much rather do that now than worry about getting each other presents. So we're having like, Jill's parents are here. My mum's arriving anytime now from British Columbia. We've got one of my friends from work going to come over. And I'm like, yeah, I would rather that money be where we put our money for Christmas rather than buying each other like random tat that you don't really need. Yeah. So, but I still want to get us something to open. So I don't know.
Hopefully my kids don't listen to this particular one. My wife wants to get our family to the point where we get each other small gifts and then do something large for the family, like a vacation somewhere or, you know, something larger, but we're not at that point yet where we're capable of doing that. So there's always a lot of pressure for that. Like, for example, I'm not a Black Friday shopper in any stretch of the imagination. I will freely admit that I want Black Friday shopping, but completely for myself and completely for selfish reasons. Yeah. I went around to all the local retro shops and said, okay, they have this game for this price and this game for that price and that game for that price. And then I went to my favorite local game store. He's like, yeah, no, I'll just match all their prices. So every game I wanted, he had. So I've increased my NES library to like 22 games. My daughter, of all people, my youngest daughter seems to be the one that's really getting into it because she's got her own games now that she likes to play. But no, we're more of a Cyber Monday family. I'm sorry to say, I pay the $100 or $120 a year, whatever they up to Amazon Prime to, for this reason alone. Whatever, I forget what they upped it to here.
I'm worried. It's like $80 Canadian. If you're paying at $120 US, I'm like, God, I don't know if I want to renew now.
But we pay for it for a reason, and we pay it for this reason, so that we get everything here on time. So we've ordered crap from all over.
Yeah.
It's a known fact in this house that after Thanksgiving, don't open boxes that come in the mail. And I think we're almost completely wrapped too. I did take my kids out yesterday because they haven't bought anything for. So I don't know how things were with school in the UK. I'm actually kind of curious to hear about this one. But what they do here in the US, have done it since I was a kid, is they have these companies that come in and just roll in trash, like this absolute like chintzy, cheeky garbage, so that the kids can have presents to give their parents and their siblings. And it's like they're like toys and things like that, or the world's greatest mom kind of coffee mugs and stuff like that. So they did that a couple of weeks ago, but I wanted my wife to have real gifts. So I took them shopping last night. And so they all picked that stuff that are going to be actual real gifts. And those were the last pickups. I do have one gift that has two wheels that I need to assemble and put a bow on. And that's it. I think we're done at that point. But yeah, for me, it's Cyber Monday is the way that we go about it. We order everything off of Amazon. Everything shows up. It guarantees to show up. We've never had a problem. And for my wife and I, we started this tradition probably 10 years ago. I just send her links to stuff like, hey, I'd be kind of interested in this and this and this. And she kind of does the pick and choose from there. And she does the same for me. So it's super easy because I'm always afraid that I'm going to buy something wrong. So I need a guidance book to say, hey, this is what I like.
Yeah. So this year, the only thing I kind of wanted was Jedi Fallen Order for Xbox One. And I'm like,
that's on my list.
Do I want to get it, or do I want to wait and see if I just get Amazon vouchers and then just buy it off Amazon? And so that's one of the things. So if I don't get Amazon vouchers, it doesn't matter because I'm a grown up and I'll just buy it that anyway. So I literally didn't ask for anything. I think I mentioned to you, I can't remember if I said it on air or not, but I spent a load of my money this year paying for that guy's car to get fixed. Did I not tell you? I'm pretty sure I told you about this. So one of my friend's cars broke down. He needed it for work, and he needed it to be able to like take his kid to school, or he'd lose like joint custody of his kid and stuff. And we were pretty sure it was the alternator, and I've changed like alternators in the past, but it was on a Chrysler PT Cruiser, and it said you've got to like either lift the engine or like take the drive shaft out. There's no way. Change an alternator? Yeah, because like car companies hate people now. So
my dad used to have a saying that he said, I wish that engineers were forced to work on their own cars, or at least had a freaking mechanic in the room, and like, dude, how the hell am I supposed to change that?
So tangent, because it's lack of focus. There was one of the things that made me hilariously, like literally almost wet myself when they were bringing out the Eurofighter Typhoon aircraft. One of the panels on it was designed to not be removable, and there was a component behind it. But that component was never, it doesn't break. Guaranteed not to break.
And yeah. Then when it breaks.
Okay, cool. We'll see.
Wait, so how do you repair that?
I believe, I can't remember if it was in the fin or in the wing, because it's a while ago now, but basically it's a wing change.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And that's a little pricey on a $14 million aircraft.
Yeah, whatever, you know. But yeah, the number of times I've been upside down in a cockpit with my Quasimodo positions and trying to reach things. And one last Air Force story for today, I'll tell more. When we used to work on JTIDs, which is what you get used as all of the cryptographic technology, bouncing information off satellites, so you can like the AWACS. The Americans have the AWACS, the E3D Sentry. It lets our fighters be able to do the same job and have flying controllers, but you can have one fighter in your squadron locking on, and then the other fighter can shoot missiles at it. It's really cool, high tech stuff. All top secret codes, all in here, man. It's good. Luckily, completely out of date, so the Russians can like kidnap me, and it's fine.
It's not going to do any good.
But there was one bolt on this box, which for some reason, so it was called the special bolt. The special.
I like the sound of that already.
Yeah. So it's like 1/4 inch wide until you get, but that's all just the smooth part. The bit that's got the actual screw on it is like 1/8 inch wide.
Why?
So that if you over torque it by 0.5 degree,
it snaps.
It snaps off with the bit that you can now no longer unscrew, stuck in the box. So you've now got to drill it out. Oh man, this is the special bolt. It was special.
Good lord. Oh.
So anyone ever
changing an ordinary instrument, two screws. That's yeah. Two bolts. That's it.
But I had a Sunday free, and I went down, and I jacked it up. I took out stuff, and literally, like, it was millimeters. I tried every rotation of the alternator I could think of to get it out. And like the next day, I was in agony. I just felt, because my neck was killing me. I felt like I'd been punched in the face multiple times just from lying under the car, holding those weird positions. And I just couldn't get it out. But then I also couldn't put it back on, so his car was no longer drivable. So I felt awful and like stupendously guilty. So I came home and like told Jill that I was going to pay for him to get his car fixed. So that was my Christmas present to me, was spending our money fixing this person's car.
Well, that's awesome.
It was stupid. But the moral of the story, kids, is don't be a nice person, because it just costs you money in the long run.
But that's insane. I'm still trying to get over the design flaw in that way, because alternators, like, you should just be able to reach in.
Just Google it. Chrysler PT Cruiser alternator changes was good. I found a guy in Cochrane, the town I live in, went to a garage and I was chatting to him, and he said, yeah, just get it towed here and it was sorted out. And he gave me a really good price on it. I think I paid like 200 Canadian for him to do it. It wasn't worried that we'd already got the parts and all of that stuff. But
so you have to get it off the engine once and lift it up to get it out.
Yeah.
That's stupid. Oh my! So that's the reason what the smart car that I used to own, I no longer own, because it had a transmission leak. And it was leaking on the front seal of the transmission where the drive shaft connects to the engine. On any other car in the world, you would drop the transmission, change the seal, put the transmission back up, and call it a day. It's that simple. However, because it was a smart car designed by Mercedes, a three-cylinder engine, you need to pull the entire engine out to change this seal.
Do you know what that is, Ed? Because that drive shaft wouldn't leak. That'll never leak. Yeah.
German engineering, it'll never happen.
It'll never leak.
So, long story short, the labor alone to get this engine out was more than the car was worth.
Yeah.
So, that's why we traded it in. I was like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, I was an aircraft technician for 12 years. I had my BTEC, my MVQs, all my different crappy UK qualifications that count for nothing in Canada, go me. And, being uneducated and like having to now work in Walmart or McDonald's, and you know, I love it. It's awesome, but yeah, I hate anything like that. Just really annoys me, like to a level that it just shouldn't.
Like, how in the world did you manage to design this like this?
And the stupid thing, like, there literally was no reason, because there is enough space if you wrote your other components in other ways. So the thing that's actually blocking you is piping from a cooling system where it comes out, and it's at the same height as the flange on the engine. So if you grind an axle grinder and grind off an inch of the engine flange, which is literally just cast metal, is irrelevant. Yep. So you could have cast a smaller engine, or you could have rated this pipe an inch lower or an inch higher, and this thing would come out. But no, get wrecked me. It's fine.
All right, so Sean, I feel like we've been talking quite a bit. What have you been doing getting ready for the holidays?
Mostly finding out that one of the companies that I used to... Have you ever heard of Anki Overdrive?
I just saw somebody that actually had stuff for that the other day.
So what's crazy is that company went out of business in August. Yeah.
Aww.
So I have been...
Hold on. For those who don't know what it is, kind of give them an idea of what it is, because it's a really cool idea.
Yeah, it's actually computerized combat car racing on a track. So there's a few different ways to play it. You can have up to four cars on the track. The track is specifically designed for these cars.
These are physical remote control cars, by the way.
Right, scale electric type thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
They're really cool.
Yeah, they're really... You know, they're a little bit bigger than Matchbox size cars, you know, probably twice total volume of one of those. But the thing is that they're a computerized car. There's a couple of the cars that actually get better and learn. So it has an AI in the cars where the car gets better. As you go, everything's app driven. So it's all driven on an app on a laptop or phone or whatever you can Bluetooth connect with. And the drivers get better. They get better upgrades and things. So if they win races, they get experience points. So all the cars, it's basically like a role playing game for combat cars. And it's on a specific track. The track can be as big as you want it to be, as long as the car can run X amount of laps within the 20-minute charge the car has. And basically, it's like old slot cars, but for people our age this time, you know, now.
They're badass.
Yeah, it is. And it was a great concept. When I was reading the article, I was hoping somebody would buy the IP from them so that they could, you know, somebody else could expand on it, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. But I've been out searching for all the cars because I didn't have all the cars, and my next thing will be searching for more track. But right now the cars were about 50 to 60 bucks a piece, and I just bought five cars for less than 100. So, you know, the stores on Amazon are all clearing them out. So I got a $60 one of their semi trucks for $14.95. You know, so I was just trying to complete my collection in that, and then you know probably eBay for track is what I'll do, because there'll be a lot of people that are sell out of it now on eBay. But yeah, that was kind of depressing, but you know, I'm getting all the cars now, so that's pretty cool. But, I'm also searching for X-Wing stuff, been looking for some stuff. My son's roommate all of a sudden started playing Armada and then started playing X-Wing, and lo and behold, you know, his roommate's dad has like, you know, a plethora of crap for these games that, they don't need to go out and buy stuff, but there are some things that I hadn't bought that I had been had to search for. And so looking for those things. I actually put a list together, but I can't get my squad builder to come up because I can't remember the doggone password. But probably for the next show I'll have it. But just I'm going to try to get some games in with my son over the next few weeks. And I'm going to try to play it in a sit-down position because I can't stand very long and I can't bend over at all. So
I was going to ask you how you were feeling.
Horrible. It's not getting better, which we'll talk about that another time. I don't want to talk about it on the show. But so those two things mostly. And then I'm trying to think, there was one other thing. I got some new Steam games too. So I was kind of happy about that. So
good. Still raining in WoW, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, it's right now we're on a hiatus because of the holidays.
Yeah, you know? I understand.
So the guild that I'm in, we created a guild on retail and have been doing a little bit of that. But I don't really like retail that much, so I play bits and pieces here and there and stuff. So just actually I've been trying to get back into X-Wing a little bit, you know, like into X-Wing to play it again, and I got to figure out. The way I'll probably play it is I'll set the dials and my son will probably maneuver for me is how it'll work.
Yeah.
And then I'll have to roll dice, which is going to be the worst part of the game. But I was thinking about starting to use the dice app and see how that worked and, you know, see if I can.
So
perfectly legal.
They did. The crates did a massive test on the dice app because they thought it was going to be massively biased and unfair, and find that it's actually the most fair way to play X-Wing is to use a dice app. For both of you to use the dice app.
Right. If both players are using it, it's not, you know, nothing's 100%.
Yeah, so I can't remember. Andrew did a test of X-Wing dice using it, designed a rolling machine where it was like a tumbler where it like all automated, so there was no human error that right. Just would just roll X-Wing dice, and he did like 10,000 rolls per die and found that there's X-Wing dice that vary by like 5% and 6% variance outside of the expected norm on what face they come upon. So X-Wing dice are terrible. Always share dice with your opponents. Spoilers, kids, you know. Yep. Ask to share dice.
And that just goes into the manufacturing. Like, if you really want to get into some of the geekiness of it, like, they're not manufactured at 100% level. Right. That's why, that's like, terrible. Casinos specifically build dice to be 100% random, and there's a very special process to allow that to happen. But any dice that has engraved in any way, shape, or form, like X-Wing dice do, you're going to have variance on weight, and they're always going to be weighted to one particular side over the other.
It's by dice the expected level that they would have. There were dice that, like, one dice would literally just roll more misses.
It's probably air gap more towards.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Opposite end of that, which causes that to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw it in the original, you know, the regional dice, the clear regional dice. You could see the air gaps in the regional dice. That was, you know, and I bet you if you sat down and you studied that and then rolled the dice, you'd realize that some dice were better than others.
Yeah.
And if you're Paul Heaver, you know, any die you have is just the perfect dice.
Doesn't matter.
But like I said, just share dice for your opponent, because then you're at least working on the same variants as each other.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
So the other thing I've done a lot of, I've done too much of this because I'm a child with no willpower. I've played a hell of a lot of League of Legends in the last like 2 weeks. I've been
good.
I've been playing with Tyler Tippett, Namiley and Andrew Cox, so people from different podcasts and stuff, and doing some fours and doing some all random all mid, and that I've been playing myself and like playing ranked again and like realizing how bad I am. It's good. I'm really enjoying it.
Telling you, all you gotta do is bump up the production value just a hair and start streaming it while you're doing it. I mean, you're sitting there anyway.
Yeah, I feel like I can't play and be entertaining because I'm all in on focusing on actually trying to play at the moment. So I don't know. I'm really enjoying it though. It's back to being as fun as it was when I first started, because I'm playing with other people, which is the key. When I was playing in the UK, I was playing with other people. Now that I'm playing here with other people online, it's that's where League of Legends is really actually a really good game.
So, I'll have to pick it up. That's one of those MOBAs.
It's free, Ed. It's so free. Don't ask me how much I've spent on League of Legends.
That's okay. So Magic the Gathering Arena. It's completely free. You don't need to spend any money at all, like I do every time a new set drops. Yeah. I may have every card available in Standard right now. Just saying, totally free. All right. So I think. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
One thing about Arena, though, Ed, is that it's actually built with that model in mind. Arena was a weird one. Now you cannot make enough gold to get every card before the next set. You do have to spend some money, but you can stay on a pretty good playing field, unlike other games like that, which is the basis of Arena.
I completely agree, especially with the wild card system, but without... I still think where it falls down, in my opinion, for the economy is there's no dusting system. You have the vault, and I don't feel like the vault gives you anywhere near what a dusting system would give you for like my 800th copy of this common or my 700th copy of that uncommon that I could turn into rares and mythics. So I mean, and that's really where the game is. It's really in the rares and mythics is where that game's at. And they do a really good job of if you're not paying, you're not going to get all those cards. But now it's to the point that every time I open a pack, I'm getting gems because I have all the cards. So, new set coming in January. Yay!
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, it will be. All right, so that leads us into our main topic. Chris, do you want to lead us off on Breaking Points?
So, I was kind of half watching the FFG live stream the other day, and Max mentioned something that I found really interesting. Well, there was loads of good nuggets in there. We were obviously showing off lots of spoilers for Venreg's tie and... the Fireball, so both ships from the Resistance cartoon, but then they also dropped a couple of things that Max said, oh, my list will be entirely hyperspace legal, and then Brooks said that his list wasn't, and they were playing Resistance against First Order, so that would mean that one of the...
Interesting.
So I would guess from what his list was, Brooks was running a Star Fortress, the new Fireball, and then what was it? Some A-Wings. So I would guess that the Star Fortress is what's going to not be hyperspace legal because they're not
upgrades.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, it could be upgrades. That's true.
If it's the ships, you would think the ships would all be legal as they come out. But maybe,
yeah, but that's what really got me. It made me a bit sad now. So I was hoping that even though they have such a small ship pool, if they were willing to cut a ship from Resistance, to make that would be like, yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah,
but you've kind of dashed my hopes now, so I'm a bit sad.
I'm sorry.
But anyway, it's okay.
I could be wrong. There's a strong possibility. I'm often wrong.
No, you're probably right, and I'm just a moron. I mean, that's also a distinct possibility. but one of the things that I found really interesting was they were talking about the points values and that something... So he was specifically talking... He mentioned break points and then the tie defender, but then specifically said, oh, no, the defender's not going down. You won't be able to run three of those, but some other ships will. So I wanted to start not necessarily like guessing at ships, but like looking at where the breakpoints are and how you look at it. Like, how cheap was the platform have to be where you want to spam the generics compared to, oh, it just becomes a different filler ship type thing. So like, not really going too in depth and building lists and all of that stuff, but just, you know, having a brief X-Wing chat about breakpoints and how they function.
So how we're going to define a breakpoint, for the record, is going to be any ship that currently right now has X as the maximum point. And if the points were lowered just a hair, you could get an extra ship instead.
Yeah. Fair? So I believe like 25 points is obviously the first breakpoint, because you can only field 8 ships in a list. 200 divided by 8 is 25. Correct. So any ship,
and they've already stated in standard X-Wing, you're never going to get more than 8 ships.
Yeah. So any ship that costs less than 25 points is that breakpoint of I can run 8 of these. Then you've got obviously 6 ships. You've got 5. 5 is the 40 point mark.
Mm-hmm.
Which at the end of first edition, X-Wings were 20 points.
Uh-huh.
They're now 42 or something like that.
They're 41. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, they're now 41.
Well, the T-65 is 41. I admit it. I went to my bias. Right. And what is the... Yeah, that's correct. Because the T-70s are 45. Yeah. They'd have to drop 5 points, which seems to be a bit rough.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like... That's the one that really stands out for me, would be the ships that are going to go to the 40-point mark.
Yes.
And then I think you've got anything below that is where you, I think it becomes a filler for me. Like, I'm not going to necessarily run 7, like 6 or 7 of just these ships. I think a good example would be a Striker or an Interceptor.
Yeah.
If they get cheap enough that I can run 6 Strikers, I'm probably going to run 4 and Sloan in something.
Yep.
Like, because it gets it to be a better filler ship than it does a spam ship. But X-Wings, if they cost 40 points, then you can run 5 of them.
Yep.
Right.
So I'll toss my hat into the ring on this one. B-Wings. Blue Squadron pilots are currently at 41 points. If those drop down to 40, that's, what, 5 in a list? And that is 40 hull and shield at 3 attack dice each to chew through.
So...
Or running 4, and like you said, like a named one.
Yeah.
Or a named something else.
Yeah, because you've got Blue Squadron Escort for the X-Wing is 41. The Cavern Angel and Sealot is also 41. And then... the Boy Squadron pilot is 41. So, I don't know. I mean, I already think the B-Wing is better than the X-Wing.
And that's why I went there.
Yeah, so if that goes down, I think Rebel Beef is definitely back with a vengeance.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I have another one that just popped into my... So, as I'm going down the list, and I'm just sitting here on yet another squad village, just looking at all the generic pilots. The E-Wing. Nave Squadron pilots are currently sitting at 52 points, which tops you off at 4 of them. If they were to drop down to 50, that would be 5. That's 3 shields.
Sorry, 3 of them. If it goes to 50, you could field 4.
Field 4. Yeah. Right, exactly. Okay, I misspoke. You're right.
Yeah.
So, you could run 4. And... while as broke-tastic as 3 defenders would be.
That's actually a good shot. I hadn't thought about the E-Wing. No one thinks about it. No one sees the E-Wing coming, man. They're the Spanish Inquisition.
Exactly. And again, keeping in mind how they adjust the points, they take ships that aren't really currently in use, aren't really doing really well in the meta, and they say, okay, let's adjust this just a hair and see if we can get them to reset. So if you could bring the E-Wings in, running 5 E-Wings.
4.
Well, 4. Yeah, there we go again. Running 4 generic E-Wings at 3 hull, 3 shields, and 3. And 3
threes across the board, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
Yeah.
But is it, though? I mean, you're looking at generic ships are going to be moving first, shooting last.
So
it falls into that, you know, the overall category of generics. You know, yeah, you could do it. In first edition, I could see it much more than second. Not late first edition, but earlier first edition.
Yeah, I was going to say, because there was a huge era in the early first edition age where it was nothing but generics.
And that's because I think a lot of people didn't trust the game with a few ships. You had to be really good to be able to fly, you know, the Trinity or, you know, any of those small amounts of ships. And when you got to wave four, wave five, you started seeing two ship builds because of the Fat Han. But beyond that, it was a lot of, you know, rebel convoy, you know, that allowed for two generic Y-wings, two generic YT-1300s. You know, you had the rebel swarms that allowed five ships to get on the board. Things like that, where, yeah, you know, you're trying to, but you're putting a lot of ships out there that have, you know, one defense in a lot of times, where this one might be better just because it has more defense, but you have, everybody else is going to be reacting to everything that you're doing. You know, it's like I flew the three fire sprays and they were good because, you know, they're fire sprays. I mean, you know, 10 hole, 3 attack, 2 defense, you know, pretty good. Or 10 hole and shields in the rest. And the problem is, though, is that everybody's moving after me and able to make the choices, you know, that they want to make, where I'm stuck where I'm at, you know. And if they get out of arc, I'm never shooting at them, you know. So having five ships is good, but I think as it came to in later 1.0, you started seeing those lists not prevail as much because of the fact that there were too many other things going on that really exploited that weakness of low pilot skill, moving first, and everybody else being able to react to that, you know.
So can I play devil's advocate for just a moment?
Yep.
I agree with everything you absolutely said, and I'm 100% backing you. But I feel that there's a couple of things that could potentially favor a bunch of generics in second edition. The first thing that I'd like to point out is damage sticks in second edition a lot more than it did in first edition, because you don't get nearly as much token stacking. I almost tripped on that one. Token stacking as you would in old first edition. And it is a play style that, as a second edition player, especially if you're new to the game, that you may not be accustomed to. Like, I remember distinctly Doug Kenny coming out with great articles on how to fly TIE fighters to guarantee to get shots at multiple angles. It's a play style that has kind of been abandoned because swarms don't necessarily do nearly as well because of the reasons that you've stated. But if I can run five ships and fly them into a position where at least I'm getting three of my ships are getting shots on you, or four of my ships are getting shots on you, that might be a little bit of a different story, especially with a three attack ship like the E-Wing.
Oh, you only have to look at...
I think it fits better with the B-Wing than the E-Wing.
Okay, yeah, no, and case agreed.
Just because the dial's better, and the E-Wing is, or the B-Wing is like a knife fighter, you know? It can get in close, it can turn close, it does everything in close, where the E-Wing still has to express itself, has to make long maneuvers, different things like that to stay in the fight, you know.
Yeah, well, obviously, I think if you give me five B-Wings, I would run that over four E's. But okay, if I can only run four B-Wings or four E-Wings, I think that's a closer argument.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So I did make a quick note for the actual breakpoints, just because I had a brain fart on it and couldn't think. So obviously, I'm not going to worry about three ships, but it's 66 points for Defender, which would... Max said we're not going to have because he hates Ed. Then, you know, mathematical genius that I am, if you want four ships in 200 points, they have to be 50 points or less. Then 40 points for five, 33 points for six, 28 points for seven, and 25 for eight. So those are the break points that we're kind of talking about now. But yeah, I think E-Wings is a really interesting one, purely because of their ship ability. They have Gendon built in. Turn one, all four of them can target locks into your fell and then just dare him to fly at them, because it's going to be a target lock focus shot.
Yep.
Yeah. And I don't know any ace that wants to
fly. If anything worth your salt, it's going to be at least six dice that are target locked and focused on them.
Yeah. So I think that's a really interesting one. I think...
if you want me to don't mind, I can jump over to the Empire real quick. The only one that really kind of jumped out to me as far as a breaking point would be the TIE Reaper. They're sitting at 41 points right now. I could see them dropping to 40 without a problem. I don't know that generic Reapers, though.
Yeah, they're not the Reaper's so hard to fly.
Yes.
I don't know. I think if you give me a point discount on a Reaper, I'm still only running one of them.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I'll take it. I will 100% take it, but I don't think I would ever be flying five Reapers. The six strikers is interesting because
that was the other one that stuck out
to me. Like, but the initiative ones, man. I feel like to get me to fly like five strikers, I'd want a Reaper in there as well. If I can fly five and a Reaper, but then you're looking at some huge discounts on that. And then do you just fly four better Reapers with Sloan? Oh, sorry, four Strikers, a Reaper, and Sloan, stuff like that. Like, you can now anyway, but if you can drop in a TIE Fighter in there as well, and I don't know, it gets... How many points do we have? Yeah, I don't know, man. That's scary. So
quick thing about the losing my train of thought.
Yeah.
Looking at the TIE Reaper.
Yeah.
I find it. It's kind of like a B-wing to me. If you're gonna fly it, you're gonna fly it similar to how you would fly a B-wing because of the dial. It has a close quarters dial. It doesn't have a long K turn at all.
But you have to remember the aileron on it and then the medium base. So you have to flap straight. You have to flap a one move before you do that move. So it actually ends up moving really quickly. So
it's like a faster B-wing to me. Mm. But you would have to perfect, you know, where you're putting these things and what you can do with them. You'd have to be really well practiced.
Oh, definitely.
Because of their speed.
I think the Reaper's an underutilized ship purely because it flies so differently to normal ships that people just... Why would you put the time into learning the Reaper when people are playing extended and you can just play the shuttle?
I agree.
I don't think that's a problem with the Reaper. I think that's a problem with the formats and the shuttle having the rear arc and... You know what I mean? I think there's some balance issues in there, but I don't think the Reaper's necessarily a bad ship at all. Especially, and Ed will attest to this, Major Vermeil is pretty good.
Pretty darn good, yeah.
But if you're looking at what we're talking about here with the breakpoints, you know, five of these things on the board, that's eight health, so it's a B-wing. It's basically a B-wing for the Empire. That's what this is.
It's a B-wing that really gets in there and mixes it up pretty darn quick.
Yes, it does, because it's moving at you quick.
Okay, so I've got one for you, Ed.
Go for it.
Scum and Villainy, the Fang Fighter. Ooh. If they make the Fang Fighter cost four... So this would have to be a four-point discount.
Yeah, that's pretty significant.
Yeah. Would you fly five Initiative 1 Zealot Recruits, or would you just put toys onto Fenro?
So you're making the assumption that when they drop the price of the chassis, that his price goes with it.
No, as in I'm assuming that Fenro is fine and stays the same.
Yeah.
It's okay. Just the bottom end is getting trimmed. So the differential between what cheapest and most expensive will get larger.
Yeah.
Is my assumption for now.
Okay. We can go
again. I'm sure. So just for listeners, we're going to actually do our points predictions on the next show for the changes in January, but I thought this would be an interesting topic to just make random assumptions per ship, mm-hmm. because it makes an interesting talking point. So assuming that Fenro stays, everything else in the game stays cost the same, all the upgrades cost the same, but the Zealous Recruit now costs 40 instead of 44. Would you, because you can currently fly Fenro and three Zealot Recruits with no upgrades. So you've now got 12 points worth of upgrades.
Do those 12 points go on to Fenro, or do you try to squeeze points?
Well, Fenro and a bid.
Oh, there's that too. And
yeah.
It's 12-point bids, not a bad bid.
So Fearless on Fen is going to be 3 points, so you'd have a 9-point bid in Fenro.
Yeah, I like
that. You could, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, so that's one of the ones where the breakpoint feels good, but in honesty, I think five Zealous Recruits would be really good.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
but I think Fenro is super good, so yeah, I don't know, like,
why would you not do that?
Yeah, and that's one of the things what I like about this topic is that breakpoints are all well and good, but sometimes it doesn't work the way you think.
Right,
exactly. This isn't going to work. This isn't going to go the way you think.
You're not necessarily going to put those points into a new ship. You might put it into a new upgrade or go in for a points bid.
Yeah.
I have another one from Scum and Villainy, okay. Since we're on your Scum and Villainy. The G1A Starfighter. Currently sitting
that was the one I was going to pick. Yeah,
yep, look currently at sitting off. At 41 points. It is basically the Scum and Villainy version of a B-Wing, just as we talked about the Reaper for the Empire. Its dial is a lot worse in comparison.
And it's a medium base now.
It is a medium base now, correct. But
I would love it. I would love to see 5 medium base ships on the table.
Yes.
That
yes.
would be...
Thank you.
That would be weird. I imagine that would be super hard to fly. Because, so, well, 4 B-Wings... yeah. So, 4 U-Wings has been stuff I've seen on the table in Calgary. And I believe it was doing well, so I could joke just a pure Rebel beefy Jost style list with Leia in there, but just running 4 U-Wings. And my comment on that was like, you're probably better off dropping a couple of U-Wings to get some B-Wings so you can have a more compact formation to get guns on target. And I think that just becomes even more pronounced with the Grand Finesman.
Yeah.
So... the good thing about it is you just ruin your opponent's day. You came in to play X-Wing and move your ships. Sorry, man. Looks like you bumped.
So that's where I think it'd be really interesting, especially with those medium bases. And again, I mean, they're coming to the table. They've got, you know, 3 attack dice. They've got 5 hull, 4 shields. They've got, you know, the jam tokens. They can be jamming while they're doing it. They could do some serious damage if they really wanted to.
You've got the thing that's even better than that for me is you have a stop, a 2K, and a 4K.
Yes. Yes.
Like, yeah. That would be really
interesting. At all to a 4K right behind you in yeah. the same movement. Absolutely. Yeah. So that is one that was really interesting to me.
One that they really, really shouldn't do, but if they do, I will definitely play, is Jakku Gunrunner. If you just drop those points back down again, you know, make it 28 points. I promise I won't just cheat and take the... Okay, yeah, that's a terrible idea. Don't do that.
Don't do that. Please don't do that.
Okay, so you can already field 4 Resistance T-70s.
Correct.
So do you
drop that 5 points though? 5 points, but the resistance doesn't have a lot going for it as far as ship count's concerned.
So what about the Cobalt Squadron bomber then for the Star Fortress? 56 points at the moment.
Yeah.
Do you trim that by 6 points?
So
remember how many points they've cut large base ships from in the past?
Yep.
Do they keep going? Are they going to let you field 4 ships that have 12 hit points each with a 3 die primary and a 2 die turret arc as well?
Ooh.
Do they dare?
Well, I mean, again, you're not really seeing them. They're not really getting played that much. And ultimately, it's not beyond the realm of possibilities as far as I'm concerned. I think it is a possibility because, again, that is how they make their decision making. It's like, ooh, we're not seeing this ship. Right? Let's bring the point. Because they'll do, and we've talked about this in shows past, they'll do the ellipses where they go up and go down and go up. And they did the same thing with Leia to kind of find out where that happy medium is. If you could drop those down and get 4 of them in a list, ooh, that would be interesting.
Because they don't have reinforce would be the one thing that I would say. It's a large base ship. The dial's pretty predictable, doesn't have a reinforce.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 12 hit points behind 1 agility. You can't have any upgrades if you drop them 6 points. So I feel like it can joust, and it's going to be a nightmare for any ace player to play against because you're not getting away from those arcs because it's the front.
Exactly.
Yeah, like there's no way you're not getting shot. But they die.
Really cool
they
list.
Die. I feel like that. So I know you're going to hate me for doing this, but I feel like that would be very reminiscent of what they actually do in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
That they would just float slowly towards you, exploding all the way, but just outputting damage.
Yeah, just so that damage output. Absolutely.
So this is going to be my shit take of the day. My terrible take if I want that. I feel like that would be fine. I promise you people will not abuse it and like find more points for A-Wing somehow. Like people will definitely run 4 of them.
Yeah, no, I think it would be an interesting list. It'd be kind of intriguing to see how it worked.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're into first order. The TIE Silencer, sitting at 51 points at a break point there. Dropping it down to 50 gives you 4 of them. Generics, yes. Not Kylo. Boost, barrel, focus. Kind of AC on a medium base.
I've got a better shape than that, man.
Oh, go for it.
Epsilon Squadron Cadet, TIE FL, currently sits at 26 points. Are you going to let me play with 8 FLs?
Oh.
Taking into account I used to run 8 TIE Fighters back in first edition, I'll do it. If you let me run 8 FOs, I will run 8 FOs.
Okay, so I'm not going to lie. I completely skipped over that one because I never thought they would do it. But you're right. They could absolutely.
It's only a 1-point drop. Gets you to that 25-point break.
So then you get into what the points values are. So this gets into that weird equation where what are the points values worth for that shield that it's got over the TIE Fighter? TIE Fighter's sitting at, what, 23? They'd be sitting at 25. So is the shield really worth 2, but then it's in a different faction? You got to take that into
account. Like, how much of a howl run attacks all of the Imperial TIE Fighters playing? Like, it's not even a howl, it's a howl run and Iden tax.
Correct.
And if that is the case, so this is a slight tangent, but you know, we love this stuff anyway.
Absolutely.
Would you drop, say you knock 2 points off the Academy and add 3 points to Iden and 3 points to Hellrunner?
You'd still do it.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. How much do you want to punish the Academy because Iden and Hellrunner exist?
Yeah, that's a fair argument.
Because I understand your point, because currently I'm paying 3 points over an Academy. I get a shield upgrade and my 2 hards are better. And arguably, I get swoops instead of one of the K turns, I think. I'll just make sure I'm not lying to the listeners.
Well, and I'm trying to find...
Yeah, I get 2 swoops and a 4K.
Which pilot would be their Hull Runner?
They just don't have one.
Yeah, so they would just quite literally just run 8 generics.
Yeah, you would.
Oh, that could be. There were plenty of people back in the day that ran just 8 generic TIE fighters. They'd go 4.
No, I did it. I did 4 Obsidian, 4 Academies.
Exactly. And it's a lot of damage to put out. Well, and what it does is it takes dice off the board is what it does. Okay, so I'm taking 1 ship to kill this 1 TIE fighter. That means my other 7 ships are free from attack from that one. That means my other 7 ships can get shots versus it's a sacrificial lamb kind of thing. So, yeah, I could absolutely
and it's not that. And I have a 5 straight. Oh, look at that. You shot me. And if I was a TIE fighter, you did 3 damage, so you would have killed me. But I had a shield upgrade, so unfortunately, you didn't kill me. And now I'm going to 5 straight past you.
Yep.
So, would you like to K-turn? I promise these other FOs aren't going to 2 straight and just shoot you if you K-turn to chase that one. Yep. It's up to you.
That is an intriguing one. I skipped past it because I didn't put any thought into it, but you're right. That is absolutely an interesting breakpoint. They could drop 1 point and really change. And again, I think the First Order needs some assistance. I think if nothing else, Worlds kind of showed us that there is... I mean, they hamstring the 3 Epsilon list early because of how unfun that list was to play against. I can see that.
I feel like... SFs, I think, are fine.
Yeah.
I could potentially see movement in the gunner and the chassis changes, but I'm already running that list of just my Omegas and an Upswan, and I still think that's like real. If I'd have gone to Worlds, that's what I would have run. So I was running Tavson and then the Omega Squadron Experts with no upgrades. So if you give me points, literally I'm just putting upgrades on, I'm putting crack shot on all of my Omegas. Something like, you know what I mean? Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'll take it. And I said on the last show, I believe, that I lost my first game with that list. I lost by a point, remember? So had there been a point cheaper, I would have won. I would have won.
So that's really what it's all about, is Chris wants to win his games.
Yeah, just retroactively, I can erase that loss. And
yeah, and say you won it, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to go for you. Galactic Republic, Arc 170, 42 points for the 104th Battalion pilot.
You can't, man. You can't. There's no way I...
Oh, come on. You dropped those two because points.
You're not wrong, but this is the most disingenuous... This is as bad as me saying that, you know, I feel like you should make Fifth Brother Hyperspace Weagle. I promise I don't just want him on Duchess. You know, like Fifth Brother, that's a nice fluffy, you know, card. Yeah, it should be in high. I don't just want Force on Duchess. It's fine. I don't want to be able to focus evade on my semi-ace pilot. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's the most disingenuous argument ever that, oh, if you make a 104th Battalion pilot 40 points, I promise that's just not a deeper bid for Anakin.
I was thinking more in the lines of running five.
I know. Yeah. And that's what I mean. You're not wrong, but is it just a deeper bid for Anakin?
Yeah, fair point. It is a fair point. And I guess in my mindset, I need to keep in mind that it's not completely in a vacuum.
Yeah.
We're not looking at just one ship. We're looking about the things that are built around it. I personally just want to run five Arquen 30s because I think it would look good.
So this is an interesting one in that I actually would rather... For the arc, I would rather see the top end come down. This is one where I think it's ridiculous that the oddball's 52 points in an arc.
Yes.
And like the 104's 42. Like you get 3 points of initiative, which is not insignificant. Mm-hmm. Your pilot ability is effectively blank. And you have the ability to take an EPT, which is probably useful, but you're still in an arc 170, so maybe. Like, I don't know that other than the Synchro Swarm and Wolfie has got that interesting interaction where you can get like the double tapping and like the butt shot being boosted and stuff. So those two are good, but like Dragon Oddball, I think, yeah, I would rather see the top end come down from the arc. Oh, that's an interesting one.
Kind of cool.
No, you're not wrong. Well,
I want to see five of them on the board. Or
yeah,
four, I'm sorry.
I feel like you're putting too much faith in humanity.
You're right. I probably do.
Like, look, man. If I give the banks no regulation, they probably won't cause the housing market to crash because that would just be a stupid thing to do, man. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Too much faith in humanity.
Too much faith in humanity. All right, so moving on to the Separatist.
I just want to double check if there's anything out. Yeah, so you've already got the Gold Squadron troops already at 25, so you literally are just giving them toys if you make that cheaper for a torrent. Bravo Flight Officer is another interesting one because no one's flying that at all. Like, if you're taking a Naboo, you're taking Anakin, Rick. Well, you're taking Rick, then Anakin, then probably Padme.
Right.
So Bravo Flight, if it came down a point, you could spam them at 6, but you're not going to. But I think...
It'd look cool as hell. It'd be very reminiscent of episode 1. Look kind of cool, but...
Yeah, all right. Is six Naboos as bad as three defenders?
No.
Probably not, especially if they don't have any points to play with.
No, and they're two attack dice, and that's a little different, I would think.
Yeah, so you'd have 2 points to play with, so you can spam an upgrade on all of them. Yeah, what could you do if nothing else changed? You could, I don't know. Yeah, there's not... You could take a Handmaiden, I suppose, if they all got... No, that's 40, not 30. I just can't even add up. Yeah. So you couldn't spam anything decent there. So maybe that's not a bad break point to... Okay, I think it helps it slot in into more places, but realistically, I think... Yeah, that's probably the only faction where I can't really see anything that I would want to spam unless you're going to let me break the game.
With 4 orcs, please.
But no, it's like, if you're going to give me like 5 Jedi Knights with B7, not 7B, then we can talk.
Oh, God.
But to do that, you're making something else. You know what I mean? There's another break point in there that you're missing.
Yeah, no, and that's why I didn't touch the Jedi, because the Jedi are perfectly pointed where they are. Maybe need to go a little bit higher in certain areas, but... All right, so back onto the Separatists.
The Separatists, yeah.
Sith Infiltrators sitting at 51. 4 of them. I don't think it breaks the game. to start off with running four.
No, I think you're right. That I think Stiff Infantry, yeah, I could see that.
Four of those.
Let me consider looking at, because you know, you've got no points to play with.
Nope.
It doesn't have reinforce. You can't do any of the cloaking shenanigans.
Nope.
Yeah, seems okay.
And the only thing even remotely close would be the Bellabob, and that's the, you can maybe take it down to 33 for the generics. But I feel
so
like that.
The initiative three, Sokoan Ace at 41.
Yeah. That's an option.
That's interesting. If you get, like, you're talking about the same kind of thing as being able to run five X-Wings, being able to run five of these, mm-hmm. and they've got, because these are, like, they've got boost focus as a linked action.
Yes.
That's a pretty aggressive list coming in at initiative three. You don't have any points for upgrades, but you've got decent linked actions on there. I could see that.
I could see that. They also have barrel roll boost or barrel roll focus too. So yeah, I can see that one. I actually, that one slipped past because I was looking at the low end, but you're right. That one could definitely be fun. And it does kind of set a standard. If you went through and did that, it would set a standard that your standard three attack die, three hull ship is going to come in that you could run five generics if you really wanted to.
Yeah. And I don't feel like there's many, but Will, I was chatting about earlier, has played a list quite a few times, actually. He's been messing around with, like, Sif at Darth Maul and Sokoan Aces and different things like that. And even that kind of list, I feel like it, having a couple more points here and there to play with doesn't break anything. But I do find that break point quite interesting, that because they've only got five hit points compared to the X-Wing has got six and the T-70's got seven.
Correct, but they've got an initiative over them.
Yeah, but they have the initiative.
Yeah, so I think it's a fair trade.
Yeah, the dial is worse. I feel like I can say the dial is objectively worse. Because they don't have a K-turn. They only have a three swoop. They don't have a one straight, but they have a one herds, but the three herds are red. And the blues are in the two banks, not one bank. So I definitely think that that's objectively worse.
That should be the game that we play on Vassal. Take five T-70s or T-65s.
Sorry, I thought you meant, is Chris using the word objectively correct?
No, that's not what I was going to say. I think we should do five T-65s and five of these and see which one pans out. I think that'd be an interesting game, just to kind of like test that theory.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it would be fun because we did the three defenders. Correct. So much fun. Look at me being stupid, making terrible choices, and still winning. Still winning.
Tiger blood, my friend. Tiger blood.
As I said, there's a reason why Max said that they're not coming down.
Yep, there is a reason. Yeah. All right, anything else you add at this point?
I don't know. Did you think of anything from that, Sean? Anything jump out at you from that conversation? Anything you'd like to grab an extra one of? Or does it just worry you that it still wouldn't matter because we're firmly in A-Wing? I don't know.
I think it's kind of a mixture. I'd like to see the bombers, get an extra one of those on the table and see what they could do. The B-Wing, though, is the one that, you know, it's the one I like the most because I like playing B-Wings. I used to fly four and probably had my most success with four. Putting a fifth on the table might be a little bit brutal.
Yeah, I think the interesting one for B-Wings for me is obviously we're getting the S-foils for them in the card pack.
Ooh.
So if they're going to get better...
And cheaper?
They're already better than X-Wings, so I feel, I'm not saying it would be a Teddy's out of a pram kind of moment, but this is going to be one of the ships we can put down for next week when we record. We'll do the B-Wing, the cheapest B-Wing with S-foils.
Do we know the points on S-foils yet? I didn't see that.
We don't know any points, no.
Now, it would be interesting because never mind.
S-foils on the other ships are zero.
Yeah, and that's where I was going with that.
It could be interesting. If you drop... S-foils? Well, no, but I say if you drop the B-Wing a point, so you can take five of them, but then charge a point for foils.
Ooh.
So you can't take five of foils, maybe. I don't know. I'll have to think about it. Yeah, so we'll not talk about it too much now. We'll hit that next time on the points prediction show. Where Ed gets to make me donate money to charity when he beats me again.
And in case you didn't notice, Chad or Chris sent over a screenshot of the thank you note that he got from the JDRF for sending over that stuff before. So thank you, Chris. That's awesome.
Second time this year they've sent me that note. Because you keep beating me and I keep paying them.
All right, so I think that's going to do it for the main topic. Let's roll into our spoiler-free review of The Rise of Skywalker. So full transparency on this one, I've seen the movie twice. Chris, you've seen it once, and Sean has not seen it yet at all. So I'll kick off with I'm going to stick with my original thought on this one. Again, trying to stay out of spoiler territory as much as humanly possible.
We've only had your initial thing of that you liked it because that was before you saw it a second time. And I think I posted in the chat that it's good my thing. So we haven't really talked to each other about this very much at all.
We've talked a little bit in the warm up here, but so I'm going to stick with my original evaluation of the movie. It's a good Star Wars movie. Is it completely free of issues? No. I've got a nice long list here waiting for an InFocus to discuss some of those. I will go out on a limb and say, of the sequel trilogy, I consider it the best of the sequel trilogy movies. However, as a trilogy, I still consider the sequel trilogy the worst, meaning that somehow, some way, they managed to go above the prequels. And go in, but it's for completely different reasons. And some of the stuff I think we sort of talked about, I don't even remember if this is on camera anymore, where I don't feel that this particular trilogy had a direction. I don't feel that this particular trilogy had a laid out plan as others have. And I think it definitely shows in this film with the rabbit out of a hat, let's pull Palpatine into the story to kind of close it all out kind of thing. Now, that all having been said, I lay all that blame on Kathleen Kennedy, by the way, and thank God that Kevin Feige is now going to be in charge of all of this, and Jon Favreau, and hopefully we'll get some better Star Wars movies in the future whenever they get back to doing those. Now, that all having been said, visually the movie was absolutely gorgeous. There is some weird stuff with Princess Leia's character, obviously because they had no other choice. The scenes that I saw her in, you could tell that she was CG'd into some of the scenes. It was good. I mean, it wasn't great. It was good. But given what they had no other choice. And I feel like a lot of the dialogue that was taking place with scenes where she was in was built around the sound bites that they had of her. It was almost like a leading into a sentence kind of thing, but I excuse that completely because obviously, she passed away and obviously Carrie Fisher wasn't there to record lines.
We definitely spoke about this during our chats about The Last Jedi and stuff, and obviously she passed away before that movie came out, and I'm firmly in the camp now, especially now that I've seen this, that I feel like it would have been for a betterment of Star Wars had they reshot The Last Jedi and had her pass away in when she gets blown out of the bridge, when her died then.
That happens.
Yeah. And I rewatched. Me and Jill sat down on Tuesday, watched The Force Awakens, Wednesday, watched The Last Jedi, Thursday, and I wasn't too bothered with The Last Jedi anymore. The things that I really dislike about it are properly irrelevant. Trajectory on lasers, the hyperspace thing, all stuff
one in a million.
But just stuff like that, which is it only bothers me because I'm invested in the background and the fluff and the feel of the Star Wars universe.
Same.
So. If I let that go, which I kind of can now, now that it's bookended, I feel a lot better about it. I don't really care anymore. And that's one of I should just get onto a point of this movie rather than blathering on about garbage. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie in the same way that I think Pacific Rim is a good movie.
Yes. You had said something to me whenever, right before we started recording, like if you took the Star Wars out of it and just looked at it from a science fiction or a science fantasy kind of movie, was it a good movie? The short answer to your question, yes. Yes, it was.
So this is The Last Jedi you're talking about now.
Yeah, you were saying that about The Last Jedi. I'm applying the same here.
Yeah.
Even in the Star Wars realm, it's not the worst Star Wars movie that was ever made. Yeah. It's not. I would rank at least 2 to 3 other movies before it that were worse than this movie. The best words that I can try to say on this one is that it's not nearly what I was expecting. There is a lot of fan service, and you can tell that J.J. Abrams took a lot of painstaking efforts to correct most of the mistakes that were made in The Last Jedi. Now, I'd said this off camera to the guys, but there's a lot of passes I need to give this movie considering the circumstances that led up to its making. J.J. Abrams was painted into a corner in a lot of areas. Luke was already dead. They weren't going to bring him back through some cartoonish, oh, now Luke's alive again, and just do that. So he was painted into a corner on that topic. He was painted into a corner with Snoke. He was painted into a corner, not through his own fault, or even as much as I'd love to blame it on him, even Rian Johnson's fault, that Carrie Fisher passed away. So there were 3 things that he really had to work with on that. So when you get down to the substance of the story, it's a good story. It definitely ends the entire trilogy. It kind of brings everything all together. I don't feel that it accomplished its goal of closing out the entire saga, because I feel like, I don't know, but there were definitely a lot of callbacks to other movies. Like there would be scenes that would be going on and I'd be tapping Chad in the shoulder like, hey, this kind of gives me the feel of Episode 1 in pod racing, or this one kind of gives me a feel of this. And so there's a lot of nostalgia throughout the course of the movie. I came out of the movie not hating it, and I actually liked it. I mean, that's so, probably from as critical as I am of Star Wars movies, that's probably the best that I can give it.
It's really interesting because I came out and I liked it as well, and I think I've only seen it once, but I still like it. I still think back, and it makes more parts of it make me smile when I think back at it than make me go, huh. But I'm like completely reversed to you. I think that this is actually a pretty bad film if you look at it from a, so the way I look at it, if I use the term movie, I'm talking about the popcorn experience. If I use film, I'm talking about a Shawshank Redemption level of, you know what I mean? So that's just to caveat these statements. I think it's a good movie. I think it's a bad film.
Yep.
I think that there's nothing wrong with that. I think it does an okay job of bookending this trilogy. But I think it does a really, really good job. If you take Episode 1 to 9, it kind of, again, we want to be relatively spoiler-free, but we all know Palpatine's back from a trailer. And it kind of becomes, it brute forces the Star Wars saga to be Skywalker and Palpatine story, not the Skywalker story.
Yes, that's a fair argument. I want to go on some positives, first of all. Some of my previous complaints of the previous two movies with Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, it was I felt like the humor was a little bit over the top. Like, I don't need your mama jokes in my Star Wars. Call me old and crotchety. I'm fine with that. The humor that was in this movie, and again, it's a lot of the playoff of Finn and Poe, was good.
General.
Yeah, it was good. Like, it wasn't overt. It wasn't over the top. It wasn't to the point that I feel that it took you out of the movie kind of thing. I think they did good Star Wars humor, like normal Star Wars humor that I would anticipate in one of these movies. trying to keep out of the Star Wars. I don't think it's a big surprise. We know that Billy Dee Williams was filming on this one, calling back to having his character in. There's character development. There's a lot of good character development in this film. I believe it to be more on the secondary characters, though, and not so much on the main characters. There's one main character that kind of goes through a specific arc throughout the course of this, which kind of reiterates certain beats of another previous movie. but it was okay. I was okay with it. I kind of liked how that went. I liked the direction that that went. I liked some of the character development they did with Poe. I liked some of the character development they did with Finn. You got a little bit more into those characters. Oh, wait, Christian, I can tell from the look at his face, so he disagrees with me.
I disagree with Finn specifically because I don't think it's possible to develop Finn's character with the way you took the film after the war. Finn in The Force Awakens is a different character to Finn in The Last Jedi. It's a different character to Finn in The Rise of Skywalker.
So I think
that's not because the character develops, because he's a different person. They're just like, this no longer fits the remit I need, so I'm just going to make it up.
I'll throw something in on that. I think Finn's entire character development was done in The Force Awakens. Yeah. Because when you look at his story arc, his whole story was to get away from the Empire, and he did it. From there, now he's just a plucky character.
That's the first shot.
Once you get away from the Empire, you're just a plucky character. You're a side story, you know, and that's all he was. You know, after Force Awakens, truly, he's just a side story.
So they do give him a little bit more. They do give him a few more pieces into this one. I think if nothing else...
But does it develop from his last film, or does it just replace with, like,
all right, so
stomp?
That's kind of where I'm going on this one. So I genuinely believe, and I'm usually the first person to jump up and say, good Lord, why do they do this? It's just a money grab. I genuinely believe that this movie would have been better if they broke it up into two pieces. Because I feel like they were trying to cram in a 6-hour story into 2.5 hours. So if we want to get into some of the criticisms, the film goes at a breakneck speed. You are going from point A to point B to point C to point D, like with very little downtime in the middle. It's, you know,
fetch quest,
end of
the movie. How much of that do you think is actually just JJ being a stage magician of, you don't have time to look over here. Look at this magic happening here.
I agree with that completely, because on the first watching, there's a lot of stuff that I didn't pick up on that I picked up on the second watching that went, hey, wait a minute. Because now I've had time to think about it. I agree with that statement. But what I genuinely feel is that if this had been broken up into two pieces, all right, so I'm not going to be spoiling too much in the fact that they spend a huge amount of time in this movie retconning or correcting mistakes that were made in The Last Jedi, or at least perceived mistakes. If you like that movie, like I know Sean does, you might not care for that side of it. Myself, I felt like, as a fan of the Star Wars saga and not liking The Last Jedi, I felt like a lot of the movie was dedicated to retconning or correcting mistakes from The Last Jedi. That could have been its own movie. That could have been its own movie and progress some of the story. But what they tried to do, they tried to do a whole bunch of stuff all at once. So they tried to retcon the Last Jedi as much as possible, which they accomplished to a degree. They tried to progress the story, but they also tried to button up the Star Wars, you know, Skywalker saga all at the same time and all in the same movie.
Yeah.
Now, we know there were a lot of reshoots under this, and you can tell that there were a lot of reshoots in this movie because they literally go from piece to piece to piece, and it was mashed together.
Is it almost Harvey with a beard in, the mustache being black tight?
Almost.
On Superman.
Almost.
That's the worst reshoots ever.
Yeah, Henry Cavill. I'm going to CG out my mustache.
Henry.
Yep.
Yeah. So one thing before you go too deep onto this, I wanted to. I think it was Ryan Farmer mentioned this to me, which I can't remember if it was or not, but there was a quote on Twitter from, it was actually in an interview from Chris Pine talking about JJ directing him in the first Star Wars movie, Star Trek remake, sorry. And it's the scene where he runs onto a bridge and he's like going to spout this is what's happening. This is a plot point. I hope the audience is listening. And like he stopped and asked if he could do another take, and then he's like, can you like explain what all of this stuff means? I've got no idea what I'm saying. I'm just reading this line off a script, and obviously I'm paraphrasing here to try and tell a gist of a story. So he was trying to understand what was happening so we could put the correct emotion and like get that scene down. And JJ said, it doesn't matter, just say it as quickly and as urgently as you can, and the audience will think something's happening.
That about sums it up.
It's, I think, and that is the Force Awakens and the Rise of Skywalker. It doesn't matter. If you do it quick enough and urgently enough, the audience will think something's happening. So and it works.
I'm going to throw something into this. You know, when I watched The Force Awakens the first time, I actually had to watch it three times to fully get what the hell was going on. When I watched The Last Jedi, I had to watch it once and I understood what was going on. Yeah, it was much more cohesive, much more cerebral than The Force Awakens was, because JJ likes... What does he call it? The magic box or whatever it is?
Yeah, the mystery box.
The mystery box. You know, the bullshit that you're putting behind the camera, and that people have to sit there, and all the Easter eggs and all that crap. That's another thing I really, because I don't like movies that I have to, that force me. I want to go back and enjoy a movie a second time because I want to enjoy a movie a second time. I don't want to have to sit there and see a movie and then have to go back again because you missed 50% of it because there's just way too much crap going on. You know, that's another thing I really enjoyed about the original trilogy is that other than I was 7 years old when I first saw it, but when I started watching it again as an adult, I didn't have to go back and watch it again 500 times to get all the little things. Very cerebral. Yeah. You know, a lot of quirks to it, but it was a good movie. Empire Strikes Back, I had to go back and watch that multiple times. That's one of the reasons why it's not one of my favorite Star Wars movies. Number one, I'm not a huge Star Wars fan on the characters, and I've said this many times. You know, the main characters in Star Wars were not the things that make me love Star Wars. It's the space battles. The ships are more more of a character for me than Han Solo, Luke, Leia. I like the droids just because they're just weird, you know, and that's probably more being, you know, from being a kid. But there's a lot of things that I really enjoy about the movies that if you took the main characters out, I would be extremely happy with. And it's why, you know, and I made this comment before, this is why to me, The Mandalorian is to me what Star Wars should have been, because it's not just driven on all of these, you know, this plethora of characters. That is so, even in the slowest episodes, it's an extremely good show because you're world building, you know?
Yes, yeah. It's doing something that the other movie that...
And I don't actually watch it a second time to figure it out.
And it's auto-correcting a mistake. The only complaint that I've had at all about The Mandalorian in any way, shape, or form thus far has been, hey, you're introducing these really cool characters and then you leave and go somewhere else and introduce a new cool character, and then you leave and introduce a new character. But now, especially with the last episode.
Okay, so, again, no spoilers for that either. Because
world building.
Okay.
Yeah, but, you would not spoil anything there, but it's like, it's season one, and it's, was it 8 episodes for season one?
So there's one more episode.
So, I see this as like part one of a movie, because they're short episodes as well.
Yeah, they are.
They're only like 35 to 45 minutes per episode. So you could have it, watch it all in a sitting quite easily. And if you look at it from that point of this is like a book one of an ongoing series of books, and you're reading it in chapters, if you look at it in that way, it kind of makes sense.
From from what I heard, they are planning a minimum of 8 seasons.
Yeah, so I have no issues with it being approached in that way.
The beauty of that is that, so one thing I really enjoy about it, which I don't enjoy about the Saga series, is that when you look at The Mandalorian, you have, what is it, 6 different directors directing the first season. You can tell some stylistic differences between directors, but it's all the same story. You know,
the story is cohesive regardless of the direction,
and I like that. I like the fact that you have different directors because you're seeing a little bit of a different style.
Yep. All right, so Chris. Chris, here's your soundbite for you. I will agree that I feel that Rian Johnson did a better job directing The Last Jedi than JJ did of directing Force Awakens and Rise of Skywalker. I will agree to that statement. I still feel that I do not agree, vehemently disagree with his decisions with the story, but as far as the quality of the film, the speed, the pacing, he did a better job than Rise of Skywalker or Force Awakens.
So I feel like that's a bad review of the Rise of Skywalker, purely because you said the pacing was better, and the pacing in The Last Jedi is terrible.
Yes, I'm aware.
Because of... So, I mean, so...
You disagree.
No, I do not disagree. Yeah, this doesn't spoil anything. I sat down. I wasn't worried about this because I've said all along that I wasn't going to judge any of these three films until all of them were out. I'll say if I enjoyed it or not and now that kind of thing.
Now I can no longer have that excuse.
And so you said this is your least favorite trilogy.
Yes.
I've got original trilogy, this one, and then prequels.
Really?
Yeah. Even with the disjointedness, I feel like the problems I have with the prequels still, I don't know. And it's not by a large gap for any of those. I don't put it like the original trilogy at a 10 and these at a 5 and then, you know, prequels at a 1. It's like a 7, 6, and a 5.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's pretty tight.
To each your own. Don't get me wrong. I will not disagree that the first movie, episode one, and the vast majority of episode two was very slow. I'm not going to disagree with that.
So, but it's hard because when you talk about, and I've used this terminology myself, it's like, The Last Jedi didn't feel like a Star Wars movie. But you can't say that Phantom Menace and Jedi feel like the same kind of thing. They're entirely different kinds of movies.
Yeah.
And I understand what I mean when I say that, but like, this feels like a Star Wars movie. The one thing I would say for my like holistic review of it would be like, you sit down, and if in the first 10 minutes you haven't accepted that this is what you are going to watch, just get up and leave because it's not going to be for you. Like, you won't. You'll sit and watch it all, but you'll come down in the camp of, I don't know if I really enjoyed that. But the first 10 minutes of that movie are, this is what this film is going to be about. The story and everything is going to be there, but it's not the primary goal of this film. This is just movie experience. This is what you're paying for. This is what we are giving you. And the one worry I had at that point, and as the film progressed, it was like, they're just going to Lord of the Rings this bullshit. Like, once Frodo throws the ring into Mount Doom, I could give two shits what happens from then on. Oh, cool, we got to see Aragorn get married. That was nice. Oh, we got to see something else happen here. Oh, we got to watch him go back to Shire.
Did you ever read the books?
Oh, we got to see the... like, Sam becomes Mer. Oh, right. Can I go yet?
Yeah. Did you ever read the books? Because there's a lot that happens after. No,
yeah. I'm fully aware. But that was my concern. And that kind of happens. That you have this awesomely paced, like, 90-minute movie, and then this 30 minutes is tacked on the end, which kind of... That would be my argument for the pacing on this one. It's still good. It finishes it in a way that you can appreciate and answers what you needed answering and ticks the boxes you needed ticking. And it bookends not only itself as a trilogy, but the entire saga. So
yeah,
I think we're at the point where we just give ratings, rankings, and then move on. So do you want to do out of 9? Because that's how we've done it previously. We did out of 8 and out of 7. So
if we're going to do it out of 9 being, in my opinion, A New Hope. And
so what I would say... When we rank these, I don't feel... So we're not ranking them, we're just rating.
Yeah.
But, no. So we'll just do it out of 5. We'll do a normal one. So I don't think it's
a solid 4, in my opinion. I feel that there are... And we'll get into this in the spoiler review. There are plenty of holes. I'm going to start on the negative a little bit here. There are plenty of holes. There are plenty of things that happen in this that I really am confused with why they went that particular direction. I feel that the movie really probably would have served well to have broken itself into two movies, very Endgame, you know, Infinity War-like, to tell the full story. Because I feel like you got the Cliff's version of what was going on as opposed to the full story. But that being said, visually it was beautiful. It was an entertaining movie. I was entertained while watching it. It did check off a few of the boxes of this pissed me off about The Last Jedi and that pissed me off about The Last Jedi. Oh, okay. This feels better. There were a lot of fan service in there to tip the hat going, yeah, no, we kind of sucked at that movie. We'll fix it here. I think that that kind of detracted from the rest of the movie, though, that I feel like the substance behind the movie could have been more. They spent a lot of time trying to retcon a previous movie to make everyone happy to then tell a little bit of a lighter story. Overall, I would give it a 4. It is a good Star Wars movie in the same camp that I would have put Solo as a good Star Wars movie. There are some things I wish they hadn't done.
Yeah. So I'll give it. So I will say when we left the theater, Jill was talking to, we were chatting about it and Jill said, oh, how would you rate it? And then immediately went in to, she'd give it a 9 out of 10. So, and Jill likes Star Wars. She doesn't, yeah. She wouldn't watch the prequels with me because I wanted to watch all of it before we went. But we watched the two new ones. Like, she's not into reading all, but she read Lost Stars, in fact. Ooh, the famed Kyra. Yeah. So I got her to read that because I bought it and still not read it. But she read that and really enjoyed it. So, but she won't watch any of the cartoons. You know what I mean? I don't want to say she's a casual Star Wars fan, but she likes Star Wars. Yeah. She understood the meaning of going watching episode 9. And she said she'd give it a 9 out of 10. And I was like, a seven out of 10. So a 3.5 out of 5 is where I'm at.
Okay.
To use the same. And I feel, I solidly rated a 3.5. I firmly think that that's where I would put it. Like, just above average, if 3 is average out of 5. But I feel like that's a disservice to the enjoyment and the fun of the movie.
Right, which is why I gave it the extra half a point.
Yeah. But as a film, I don't think I can score it higher than a 3.5. It probably should be lower. But as a movie, if you want my film critic score, it's probably a 2.5 or a 3. If you want my movie, it's probably a 4.
Yeah,
or 4.5. So
take a notebook with you the next time you go see it and start taking notes. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. And like I said, yeah. I have got on my phone a list of 14 things that I had a problem with in the Rise of Skywalker.
See, that
makes sense to me.
That's more than I have a problem with in The Last Jedi. Literally, lasers don't have arcs. and going to light speed and shooting through things is bad.
Yep.
Okay, I think that should wrap us up.
All right, so that's going to do it. If you really do want to hear us go in-depth on the spoilerific version of this one, I think we're going to be doing a lack of focus. I've got a lot of time ahead of me with some time off from work with the holidays, so I think we're going to try to squeeze that in. We're going to try to squeeze in the next episode in, potentially, and some games. I think I really like the idea of the 5 Bellabob. How do you pronounce that one? I always screw that one up.
Belly rubs, Bellabobs, Bulbasaurs.
The 5 Bellabobs versus the 5 T-65s. I think that'll be a fun game. I've got some stuff on the slate. I think it'll be good for that time off. So we will be recording that one, and I will go into absolute excruciating detail on the stuff that I feel that the movie got wrong. So I'm going to say goodbye to everyone because we don't even have a question or anything. So, Chris, you've got some cleaning to do. So let's go ahead and do that.
Yep. So I wanted to first off thank all the patrons. It's been a pretty good year, to be honest. Like I said, we've given to charity a few times this year. It's been enjoyable to see that the support keeps kind of growing. And it actually amazes me every time someone new signs up. I posted on Friday, I had to grab more envelopes and ran out of the little envelopes, but all of the Roger tokens are on the way to people by the time you listen to this. Your post will be in the mail. I do have a confession. I can't remember the last giveaway we did. I can't remember who won. I put a post out on our Discord and no one could remember. So if I gave you stuff, I completely forgot and tried listening through, but couldn't remember what show it was. So sorry, just shoot us a Facebook message, send me an email if you are the person who won, and I'll send you the stuff separately in a separate mail. But yeah, I'm just terrible. Normally, I have my production notepad that I write crap down on, and I didn't put a name down. Or if I did, I just couldn't find it. So good. I tried listening back to like 3 the last three shows and couldn't find the point where we'd done the dice roll. So sorry, I'm just really, really bad. I'm getting a guy to work on a rerun of the lack of focus tokens, because the Roger tokens are the same size as the official X-Wing cardboard ones, which is slightly smaller than the lack of focus ones. So I'm going to do a rerun of those, I think, before we move on to something else.
Templates.
I think we...
Templates.
So what I considered, and I was... We can talk about this now, actually. I was going to do an offer thing, but what I thought about doing was doing one shipment, but basically it will be a January template, a February template. So I have a one straight, two straight, three straight, four straight, five straight.
That's a great idea. And then
if you do the full year, you get the full set. And
I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah, so I thought that could be fun. But I'll have to figure out a way. Yeah, you get stuff. It's good. But I wasn't sure how to make that seem interesting. I don't know. Or if that just seemed fine. So yeah.
No, I
let us know. Yeah, let us know what you think. If that seems fun, just reach out, let us know. And yeah, you can find us on Facebook, Lack of Focus Podcast on Facebook. You can email us if you want to contact us that way, at lackoffocuspodcast@gmail.com. You can send us, you can join the Discord and chat on there. And that the link's always in the description, but it's a Dice Hate Productions Discord. We have a Facebook group, which Chad posts memes in. Fun. And yeah, watch our YouTube channel. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe if you like the content. And yeah, I'm actually kind of amazed that we're still doing this. And still enjoying it. It's still enjoying it. Pretty easy. Like, this was going to be an hour-long show where we quickly hit off a review and talked about breakpoints, and we've been recording for an hour and 56 minutes.
Yeah, I just looked at my watch and went, ooh, wow, we were way over time.
Yeah, so yeah, we still enjoy doing this, and people still listen, so thank you, really appreciate it. And yeah, we try and not give you any of the rando X-Wing drama that sometimes comes about from other places, and just solidly keep chipping away and talking X-Wing.
I don't even know what's going on out there.
Oh, just, you know how it goes. Like, people like winning or doing stuff and think, I like the fact that we kind of just hover on the outside of all of it. And
yeah, no, this has been
just talk about playing games.
Good. Yeah, this has been a good theme shift for us. I enjoy, don't get me wrong, I liked doing the competitive talk that we did for Nova as long as we did it. It was enjoyable, it was fun, it really kept me engaged in the game. This is equally as fun to me for a different reason.
Yeah, I find it, so I thought of this topic about 5 hours ago and was like, we'll have stuff to talk about from that. And evidently we did.
Oh yeah,
we did. When you've got to do it and it has to be like competitive focused, I feel like you burn yourself out talking about the same things, and it's not applicable to like half, even competitive players. It's the stuff you're talking about isn't relevant. It doesn't matter. And like, especially in the environment of what we have now for X-Wing, where it changes not only on releases, but on points changes, format changes, the type of event you're playing in. I feel like you just got to let go, man. Just have fun, enjoy it. And yeah.
Agreed. All right.
Sorry, I caught you in the middle of a mute there.
You did. My wife touched me. I was looking at my phone and went, oh, crap, he's ending a sentence.
Drag it out, Chris. Drag it out.
How long show going?
Oh, sorry, man. We're literally done, so we're fine.
Excellent. All right. So, Sean, I'm going to say goodbye to you, my friend. Always good talking to you.
Yeah, it's been fun. And thank you for the listeners for tuning in and, you know, putting up with us and our insane shows that we have now that aren't always fully X-Wing related, and I like that too.
Me too. So next episode, we're gonna try to schedule it so after you've seen The Rise of Skywalker, so we can really get some of your thoughts on the movie.
Yeah, I'll see it hopefully within the next 2 days. It all depends on how the back is. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be hard to sit for 2.5 hours in one spot because it just isn't. It's very difficult for me to do that. I'm having a lot of leg issues too, so we'll see. But I'm going to effort it so that, and even if I have to go twice and like go, you know, once to the first half of the movie and then a second time for the second half, I'll have to figure that out. You know, we'll see how it goes. But my son's already seen it twice, so it'll be like his third or fourth time by the time I see it the first time. And I'm looking forward to it. You know, here's the deal with me is that I'm not, you know, I am a Last Jedi fan. I enjoyed that movie. I actually like the storyline of the movie where everything went, and it makes sense to me. I know that it doesn't to a lot of people, and I get that. And I'm not going to be mad with JJ retconning things because you knew it was coming. The fan service had to happen.
Yeah, especially with the fan division from the previous movie, absolutely.
But that's what's really crazy to me, not to interject too much. I know we're trying to wrap up for Ed as well, but like, if you don't change anything or don't... I don't even think it was retcons. I think it's just like realigning. It's realigning, but yeah. And it's like, if you don't do that, you're going to leave half of people mad. If you do it, you're going to make the people mad who liked it. And it's like, yeah, well... Sucks to be you guys. You probably should have planned out your trilogy better.
Yeah. Yes. And that's it. It's, you know,
and I don't understand how people can be surprised that any of it happened. And I feel like it's the best movie we were going to get.
Yeah.
That's probably a fair assessment.
And I will say, Ed and I talked about this, probably don't totally agree 100%, but I feel when you look at what JJ did in Force Awakens, kind of backed Rian Johnson into a creative corner. Where Rian Johnson backed J.J. Abrams into a creative corner. So everything, you know, it doesn't matter to me how it ends. I've never cared how this story would end. And in fact, I'm 50 years old. I saw Star Wars at the age of 7 in 1977. To have 9 movies in my entire lifetime of a subject matter that I love. Not exactly the main characters in the original trilogy, but the ships and the story and the battles and the locations. And you go through all that with me. That's what I love about Star Wars. That's why this movie isn't going to bother me that much. That's why the prequels didn't bother me that much. And I don't sit there and go to these movies for critically acclaimed movies because they're not. You know, it's science fiction at a very, I think this trilogy is definitely more at an adult level than the first two trilogies were, just me saying that, but I'm going to enjoy it. I hope to see it, like I said, you know, within the next couple of days. I already know a lot of what the story is because I'm not a person, I don't hide from spoilers and things like that. I don't really care if I know the whole story going in. If the book would have been written prior to, I would have read the book before. It doesn't matter to me, but I'm going to enjoy it. We're going to come back. We'll probably banter back and forth. We'll probably have different things that we didn't like, which will be interesting to see what everybody's takes are with the things that they didn't like. But in my opinion, I'm going to go into it, you know, just like I did Force Awakens. There's a lot in that movie that I don't like as far as if you're talking about Star Wars stuff. But it was a good Star Wars movie because you have to go to different places. So anyway, thanks, fans. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in and giving us a chance. And you know, we'll be back in the next few weeks and probably even in between that. But Ed, you know, Ed, Chris, have a Merry Christmas. You know, we probably won't talk before that. If not, you know, this way, we probably will through our... Because I'll let you guys know how I liked it as soon as I see it. But
absolutely.
But, you know, you guys have a great holiday and hopefully, you know, your families have, you know, a great one too. And we'll see everybody in the new year.
Can't wait. So yeah, I will echo a lot of what Sean was saying. Of course, this is going to be the show right before Christmas. So whether or not you are a Christmas person or not, I will say happy holidays. I do hope you and yours have a fantastic holiday season. I'm looking forward to actually getting into some of the details on this one. So that is where I'm going to end it. And of course, I will say to you guys personally, as I can physically see you, hope you have a happy holidays, Chris and Sean. I hope everything works out well. I hope everything that you get most of what you want for under the tree. And unless you're Chris, you wanted to repair someone's car. That's a great story.
Well, I didn't want to. I just did.
I just did. So, all right. So until next time, guys, as always, fly casual.
Thanks
Thank you once again for joining the Lack of Focus X-Wing podcast. Check out Dice Hate Productions for all of the latest episodes, and we'll be looking forward to seeing you again next episode.